everybody. Welcome to the Friday Filibuster. I'm Dave Johnson, joined as always by Mac McIntyre.
Hack-a-do.
As often by Alice Nelson.
Hello.
And as sporadically by Michael Staley.
Hello.
You know, the four of us will just kind of kill some time, get you ready for your weekend, and watching what, Mac, what's the big movie coming out this weekend?
Oh, I know what you're talking about. The Raid, right?
Ah, The Raid. Well, that's my big movie, and hopefully yours, Mac. But actually, let's go to the entertainment docket guy. Mike, what is the big movie this weekend?
I'm sorry, I've got a mouthful of food right now. You caught me off guard. No, what is the big movie this weekend?
That is you did your entertainment docket, right?
Oh, no. It's American Reunion.
It is American Reunion.
Oh. Yes.
Sorry.
You know, let me ask you guys, when did American Pie become some kind of iconic classic? Did I miss that memo?
It was kind of a big hit when it first released. I mean, if only because of the stunt with the pie itself.
Right. That is what I'm talking about. I mean, yeah. It just seems like it's been marketed with, like, you know, they put on that corny, you know, whatever music they throw on there all the time. And they seem like the market, like, this is, you know, does everybody remember their time like this? No, I don't. It's just not my life.
Well, and Universal's production people, the movie franchise has been so ubiquitous, and they've done so many different sequels to it. It feels like it's been around forever.
Well, you could say that about Jason Takes Manhattan, but I don't recall that one being, you know, marketed true. Like a slice of Americana. But no. All right. Well, so Mac, let's start with you. What have you been up to?
Let's see. Well, you know these video games, the Mass Effect.
Yes, I just finished the Mass Effect 3 myself.
Oh, did you? Well, they've been getting so much hype, I picked up a used copy of the first one, and I've been playing it.
Yes.
And it is so boring.
I actually did not finish it myself either. No. The second one is much better, I will tell you.
Yeah, you know, in some kind of far-out outer space world, and you go around, talk to a couple people, and then you're put into a first-person shooter scene, and that lasts about 2 minutes. And then, you know, for like the next hour or so of the game, it's just the game's dialogue system that they've set up.
All right.
Where you ask these questions and you get all this info dumps, and it just goes on and on and on. And you just walk around, talk to this person, talk to that person, talk to this person, talk to that person. And I'm like, do I ever get to shoot monsters again, or is it just the dialogue?
I don't know. Like I said, I stopped early. So.
Oh,
but
man.
I shoot lots of monsters in the second game. And I will tell you this, that game is held up really as like a shining example of, you know, storytelling and writing in video games. And I just finished the third one, and it was like, so-so. Just makes me think that, I mean, it just puts the lie to that. I just don't think you can ever, I mean, can you ever have a video game even approach a movie? I don't think so. Like, even like the Uncharted games is talked about a lot, but, I mean, the storytelling isn't great in that. It's just a little better than, you know, the mediocrity that passes for other stuff. So, I don't know.
Right, yeah. You know, I look at some of my favorite games of recent, like the Assassin's Creed series and the Batman Arkham City, and, you know, the cutscenes in those are, you know, scripted and performed by actors.
Now, Batman Arkham City, I think, is legit.
Because,
pretty good.
You know, they don't even try to do this sort of interactive thing.
True.
They just,
right.
You know, they tell the story and move the plot forward. And I think there's a lot to be said for that.
I agree. And plus, the talent behind them, you know, the talent kind of given life to those characters are... You know, they've been at it for a while, too.
Absolutely.
Mass Effect, it does look really pretty. I'll give them that.
Yes.
But I don't know.
Did you get to the hot alien sex scene yet?
I got to a nightclub where there's slutty dancing, but I don't think that's what you're describing.
If you want to stick through it, there is hot sex. Michael, I know you play the occasional video game. Did you play Arkham City?
I did. I did both Asylum and City.
Yeah, I just bring it up because I've been playing some Arkham City now recently after having finished Mass Effect 3, been kind of disappointed and now just running around beating people up again. So.
The only frustrating thing with Arkham City is just the Riddler quests at the end. They're so intense.
They're overwhelming. It is overwhelming.
Oh, yeah, I gave up after a while.
The payoff isn't bad, I'll tell you that, because there's some gameplay with the Riddler towards the end. So.
Okay.
Oh, really?
And it's one of those things, once you stick with it and you kind of get the hang of it, it'll come to you. Like, once you figure out how to do a few of the things, it starts getting quicker. Like, I don't know. But trust me, there was a point where I was like, how in the world is this going to happen?
Right. Well, I finished off all the other side quests, and it was just the Riddler stuff that was left.
Yeah. Definitely a game overwhelming with content. So, yeah. I don't know, Alice. Maybe I'm leaving you out. Do you play any of this stuff?
You start talking Ms. Pac-Man, and then we've got something to talk about.
Nice.
Iconic storytelling in Ms. Pac-Man.
There you go.
Anything else, Mac, before we move to our next panelist?
That's pretty much it for me, unless you got some other recommendations for a good game to try.
Ooh, let's see. I'll get back to you on that.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll have to get back to you on that. Actually, you know, if you're looking for cheap, you know, a little cheap game, check out Mirror's Edge. My vote for most underrated game this generation.
That's like that parkour.
It's like the first person parkour, and if it doesn't make you vomit, you know, I think you'll like
in
it.
A good way. Yeah.
I mean, you could probably get it for like $5 somewhere, and it's one of my favorites of the generation. So that's my pick. So, all right, Alice, how about you? We'll shift. You could take us into something maybe more high.
Well, old movie news with Alice. I'll take over for Eric. I saw. In the Cheapy Theater Chronicle, from that movie by Max, written by Max Landis, John Landis' son. Hey,
Max, did you see that one?
I missed it.
Okay.
I thought it was quite clever. It was a very well done movie. And, you know, for whatever it cost me, $3-4, it was definitely worth it. Kind of an interesting premise. These kids find this thing in a hole and then they get these superpowers and it shows what can happen when your power is limitless. Who will take it to the extreme? And it's these three friends in high school, and one is obviously mentally unstable, and he ends up doing some pretty nasty things. But it was I thought it was a well done movie.
It was like a found footage movie, right?
Did that
become intrusive at all?
No, actually, it didn't, and they were clever the way they did it because the one character who was always holding the camera. You're like, well, we're never going to see him, but with his superpowers, he was able to make the camera float, so it could just move around that. It gave it the feel of a film and not just found footage.
So his power was cinematography.
Yeah, but it was good. I would think that when good. It comes out on DVD, I check it out.
Yeah, that recommendation I had piqued my interest, not enough to get my lazy behind up to the theater, but your recommendation might. Push me into the click and purchase from Amazon Prime mode, so maybe I will.
Oh,
or purchase the DVD from DVD Verdict as well. I'll probably do that.
Yeah, traitor.
All right, Michael, you've been out and about, obviously, going 100 miles an hour, but I did see you were able to get a review of War Horse.
I did.
So
yep.
If you want to talk about that, if there's anything else that you've been.
No, we could. It's it was something that, and I think I said this in my review, it was something that I kept putting off and putting off and putting off. It just never piqued my interest. So when I finally sat down to watch it, I was impressed to a point and then realized that, you know what, it's very pretty, but there's really not a whole lot underneath it. And for Steven Spielberg to slap his name on this and call it a Spielberg film, I think it's going to disappoint a lot of people.
Oh, interesting.
That's too bad.
Anything else? We're able to...
No, not really. I've kind of been... The strange thing is, I always talked about, you know, why are people ever going to watch stuff on their phone, you know? And now I have Netflix and Hulu on my phone.
Yeah.
And I've been in the midst of running around, you know, trying to get work done. I've had the phone going, trying to catch up on TV, and I've been okay with it.
Oh, it's
actually been kind of a godsend. So
nice. Yeah. What can you watch? What TV can you watch on your phone?
A lot of the NBC stuff I've been catching up on, but then also the other night I was throwing on a whole bunch of Mystery Science Theaters.
Sweet.
Yeah, that's pretty good. You know, that to me would be pretty good portable viewing.
Yeah.
All right, well, for me, I'll just put a shout-out, I guess, to Game of Thrones Season 2 kicked off on Sunday. Once again, as we usually do in the Johnson household, we pick up a deal on a premium channel that is housing a show we want to watch, and we cancel after 2 months.
So, way to go.
So we got HBO, you know, for a couple months here, and a great, excellent kickoff to the season. Really just really looking forward to it, and... it's been some good TV unveiled around the same time, because we've been watching some Mad Men too, which I thought the first couple episodes have rebounded nicely from what I thought was a kind of disappointing finish to the season last year. So two high-end, probably two of the best shows on television right now seem to be hitting on all cylinders, so I've been very appreciative of that. And hopefully next week I'll have something to say about the movie I'm really looking forward to the most. Maybe a degree below The Dark Knight Rises, but The Raid, called The Raid Redemption, which is lame, but The Raid. I really want to watch that. So we'll see. I'm trying to convince Mac to come with me to go see it. We'll see. Twisting his arm here. I'll spoil the ending of Mass Effect, so you don't have to play it if you go. How about that?
Oh, no. Does it involve a lot of talking?
Yeah, it does. Spoiler, lots of talking. All right, Mac, why don't we go back to stuff you've been doing for the site?
Let's see. This week I finished up a review of the Season 2, Volume 1 of Danny Phantom from, I believe, Nickelodeon.
That's right.
And it's an interesting show. It's not bad.
Now, it's not done by the same guys who do, or the same guy who did Fairly Odd Parents, is it?
That's a good question.
Maybe it's a different show. I thought the art style was similar, but maybe.
It is similar, yeah. The art style initially turned me off. I thought the show would be like too kiddy and too dumbed down. But as you get watching it, it sort of draws you in. You get really involved in the characters and the humor of it. It's interesting because, you know, our main character is a superhero who's battling ghosts that keep escaping from the quote-unquote ghost zone into Earth, and he's the only one who can stop them. And he's got the secret identity and everything. But it's a comedy about a superhero, but it's not a superhero spoof or parody. All the comedy comes from the characters, their interactions with each other, and their situations, etc. But it's not really making jokes about, you know, haha, he's a superhero, and it's not making fun of the genre. Said the humor comes from other places, and that's very rare that you see that done in comedy. But I really dig the show. It's a pleasant surprise. It turned out to be better than I thought it would.
All right, nice,
cool.
Alice,
I'm working on a PBS cartoon called Arthur. It's been on since 1996. The little
you just mentioned that makes me nod off. find Arthur so dull.
I have a soft spot in my heart because my kids love it so much, and every time the song comes on, we dance around the living room, so I got it mainly for them. It's just 8 episodes right off of the PBS series. I mean, it's a nothing kind of a DVD, but it's fun. I like Arthur, and he's supposed to be an aardvark. I'm really not sure what his other friends are supposed to be, but it's a fun little cartoon.
Yeah, all right. Well, glad someone likes it.
Wait, your daughter's going to want to start watching it. You wait and see.
Yeah, I'm trying to steer her more towards, you know, She-Ra, I suppose.
Oh, that's better than Arthur, I think.
I got the whole set ready to go.
Jeez.
A lot of good lessons in there, Alice. Although She-Ra does have like one of the all-time great emasculated male characters in animation history. Somebody please just, when you get a chance, do some pull up Google Images and type in Bo. His name is B-O-W. Bo and She-Ra, and see that gentleman.
Yeah, I don't think he has any, really. I don't think he has a pair.
He's there for breeding, and that is about it.
Exactly.
I mean, if you're wearing a cape that comes up to your, like, the small of your back, and it's held on by a heart, like a little heart, and you've got a porn star mustache, and you're the only man in sight. There is, like, no other man. I've always felt bad for Bo. A terrible name. And it's not a B-O, it would be awesome. Bo Jackson, whatever. But no, it's B-O-W.
Because he's the archer. Yeah.
It's archer. Right. But, you know, I think Bo. I think a little Bo, dainty Bo in the hair.
Yeah, that's right, that too. Surprised he doesn't have one to go with his little heart.
That's right. Yeah, poor guy. So, that gave me an excuse to talk about She-Ra. So, Michael, was anything else, or was Warhorse the main offering?
No, I'm actually trying to catch up on a few things while I'm here because there's been such a lull between switching offices. We want to make sure we have enough reviews for everybody. So I'm doing, with regards to Tim Burton's Dark Shadows, the movie that's coming out relatively soon, they are releasing and re-releasing. I know you guys saw it last week, all of the vintage series. So this thing was on for 5 seasons from like 66 to 71. There was like 1,225 half-hour episodes. They used to play on ABC afternoons, probably about 3 o'clock. And I know my mother tells me when I was little, she used to watch it. But going back and watching it now, they sent us 2 of these best of discs. And this show was done live to tape, which means it was filmed like a stage show, put on videotape, and then aired throughout the week. So there's flubbed lines, there's sets falling apart, there's, you know, you don't have the slick kind of soap opera stuff that you have today. But it's a trip, and everything's, you know, hyper reality. Everything's all overly dramatic, and it was the soap opera that dealt with, you know, vampires and werewolves. We can blame them for all the Twilight kind of stuff.
There you go.
But no, it's a real trip to go back and watch this stuff, given what we know now and what our experiences have been.
Yes. Let's see. What can I tell you? I'll just tell you about one of the worst DVDs I've reviewed in a long time. Oh. I don't recall requesting this either.
I'm sure you did. But if I remember correctly, it was one of those. Send
That's
me whatever
true.
You want.
It was one of those. I will say it was one of the. I know. I always try to. I always try to kneecap Michael here by blaming on this season, but I do bring him by myself. So I asked for editor's choice. He sent me Betty White, Champion for Animals.
There you go. As seen in theaters,
which I do not understand. Like, this is terrible. And first of all, Betty White's barely in it. So, I mean, if you're a Betty White fanatic, and personally, I just, you know, she lost me after Match Game. I think she was great in Match Game, and it was all downhill from there. But, I mean, all it is like the series, it's a series of just kind of generic featurettes on animals with light sprinkling of Betty White sitting and talking about her dogs. Oh, you know, and let's see, excuse me, this was a quote that I used for the intro of the review, quote from Betty White, quote, "If we don't start taking care of sharks, shame on us." And that's kind of hard-hitting biological insight you're going to get. Yeah. So
was this made recently, or is
I think
it
so.
Years ago?
Yeah, I think it's recent. 2011.
Hmm. Wow. Never heard of that.
Yeah. That's so. And it's written and directed by an award-winning filmmaker. But yeah, I don't know. Just random animal featurettes that have been tossed in there. So,
how long was it?
Yeah,
like an hour. How long?
Yeah, 89 minutes. Full.
Now that's a long time to sit through something like that.
It is. It is. So, yeah. And then I guess a shout out to a weird little, not weird, but it's a kind of an action movie from 1971, and I stated in my review, I just don't know if action movies, like, from that long ago, I just don't think they can hold their value much anymore.
Yeah.
You know, everything is so antiquated, like, all the plots are so antiquated, and the pacing is, you know, a lot slower, more methodical, and if you have one action scene, you're pretty much in luck, and, you know, this one had a pretty good one at the end. The movie's called Puppet on a Chain. It's about a guy, it's about a narc investigator, and he finds, he's just tracking down a drug dealer, but there's a pretty good boat chase at the end, which is all practical and in the canals of Amsterdam, and it's pretty cool. But beyond that, it's just, I just don't think they don't have, I mean, I think that the action genre from this day and age just doesn't really have any much standing anymore. I don't know, maybe I'm crucified for saying that, but it's pretty boring. Except there's a pretty awesome go-go dance scene. Like, the boat chase and this scene in a go-go bar was pretty much it. And that's all he, so. It's like the tagline is great too. The action of Guns of Navarone, the intrigue of Ice Station Zebra, the suspense of Eagle's Dare. Okay, thanks. Thanks, Scorpion DVD releasing. That's very helpful. boy. Okay, so Mac, why don't we move on?
Sure, we're going to take a look at what's coming out next week on DVD and Blu-ray, and everybody at home can join us. We're going to go to DVDverdict.com, click on the upcoming releases tab, and from there we're going to scroll down and hit the link for the cover art gallery for April 10th. I'll just talk about what's on the list. Okay. And there I see the Dark Shadows best of sets.
Look at that cost. How many?
1,225 episodes. That thing sells for like $500.
Yeah, $414 on sale. Holy cow. How many? 1,200 episodes, you said?
1,225. And I think there's one that's missing out of that. But, I mean, I don't know. After watching just 3.5 hours of this stuff, I'm like, that's more than enough for me. Who in the hell is going to watch all of that?
I mean, are the same people in all of the episodes? I mean, it really is a soap opera, isn't it?
It is a soap opera. The cast wound up playing a lot of different characters because they went all out. They did parallel universes. They did time travel.
I remember the time travel arc. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, they really went all out for this. And the same cast wound up playing different characters, you know, in different seasons. But Still, that's a lot. I think this is the only soap opera that's ever been released in its entirety because, I mean, those things are so huge.
Yeah, they go forever.
Yeah. If you're a Meryl Streep fan, The Iron Lady is coming out this week, both Blu-ray and DVD. The story of Margaret Thatcher, which is kind of an interesting non-linear story because it's told through the mindset of aging Maggie Thatcher, who's dealing with Alzheimer's.
Hmm.
So it is a very interesting narrative, and it's told very well. But there's, you know, it's again, it's kind of a British biopic that a lot of people don't have the patience to sit through.
I don't know. When I see that, I just think Oscar bait, you know?
Yeah.
Well, it paid off.
It paid off, right.
Yeah, definitely. Was it worth it, Michael? Should she have won over the woman from The Help?
No, I think Viola Davis, and I think Meryl would be the first to admit that Viola actually earned her stripes on that film.
She was awesome in that movie. Yeah, I love that movie.
Yeah. But again, it's a historical figure, and the Academy tends to be older and whiter. They tend to lean towards those type of things. Yeah.
That's true.
Some vintage Doctor Who. Both Pertwee.
John Pertwee, yeah. Do we know anything about this movie, The Darkest Hour?
Sort it came of out at Christmas time.
Yeah, in and out of the theaters, pretty much, right?
Right around Christmas, yeah.
It's Emil Hirsch, who was, Into the Wild. Yep, Speed Racer. And it was kind of another one of those alien invasion type things.
Yeah. But the aliens were like these gold wisps of things.
Yeah, they were invisible and except under certain circumstances.
That's one that's one reason one way to save some budget, right?
There you go.
We'll make aliens invisible.
Visible. They're here. Look.
The invading aliens are actually old bicycles.
It's one of my favorite gags from Mystery Science Theater when they were fighting the invisible enemies, and one of the guys commented, "What the production couldn't afford thugs?"
My vote for favorite cover art goes to Super Bucks. That guy's got his gun right in the tears, point blank. He's not hunting; he's executing the deer. There's a contract out on that particular deer. This gentleman in the orange is executing him point blank.
There's also an unfortunately timed cover for Chevy Chase's Modern Problems.
Yeah, what is up? What happened? Yeah. I was late to that story, Michael. Maybe can you clue me in? What did he just flip out? There was flip out or something?
He melted down. It was the end of the season. They had one more scene to shoot, and he's been kind of a problem on the set from the very beginning. I don't think
from the beginning.
Yeah, I don't think he's really gelled with the rest of the cast.
Really? You know,
they skew younger. Chevy has known to be somewhat of a problem. And it's unfortunate because I think he's added something to the show, but this past season I guess it's gotten a little rough. And producer Dan Harmon made the unfortunate mistake of kind of airing his dirty laundry in public.
Yeah.
Because Chevy had left him kind of a half-drunk, really obnoxious voicemail, and Dan released it. And he regrets it now, but that's kind of how it all played out, and I wouldn't be surprised if Chevy is not back next season.
Are there any emotionally well-adjusted actors in the universe?
No, of course not.
Okay, just
no.
Yeah, that's a bummer. I mean, it's like, what was he doing before Community? Really, you know? Nothing, right?
Yeah.
What they did a Funny and Die version of Vacation, but no, he hasn't done...
Always kind of been Chevy Chase's bag. I mean, there's always been friction wherever he went, right?
Yeah, that's true. And it's unfortunate because I think so many people who love the work that he does.
Yeah, I love his character in Community.
Yeah.
So that's going to – I wonder what they're going to fill that hole with.
So, more cheating, maybe.
As long as not Betty White, I think.
No, she did her stint on Community.
That's true. Well, so does this blow all possibilities away for Memoirs of an Invisible Man 2? Am I the only one on the planet that liked that movie? Because I liked Memoirs of an Invisible Man.
I don't barely remember anything from it.
Yeah. That deserves a Blu-ray release at some point. All right, I don't know. Anything else going on here? No?
Well, there's a knockoff John Carter from Mars. I think it's from Asylum.
What is it? Where is it? John Carter of Mars?
Yes.
Oh, they're getting... That's pretty bold.
Yeah.
Now they're just replacing, you know, like... three-letter words.
But it's Antonio Sabato Jr. who stars in it.
Fantastic.
Oh, well, I
wonder where
there
that
you
guy
go. Yeah.
I can check him off my is-he-dead list right now.
Check him out. Okay.
Still alive.
Still alive. Okay, well, just by a casual glance, I see this might be one of the more richer offerings of inadvertently sleazy-sounding DVD releases. So I didn't even look very deep, but I think there's a lot here. So Mac, why don't you start us off? Inadvertently sleazy-sounding DVD release of the week.
I'm not sure what you're looking at. I guess I'll just go ahead with Animals United.
Okay. That's not bad.
Let bestiality.
Very tender bestiality. Alice.
We'll stick with the animals. Giant tuna.
No, you took
nice. I didn't see that one.
That's a good one. Ah, Giant Tuna Adventures.
Yes. Yeah.
All right, Michael.
I'm caught between two. So
Hey, probably say both of them, and you're probably going to screw me over both. But go.
No, I will go. Just go with one, and I will say Caught Inside.
That's not bad. See, there you go. I'm going to have. I have Into the Abyss. That's fun. Mysteries of the Deep.
Yeah, that one.
That's a bad one there. And
the drum is beating.
That's good. Snapped.
Nope.
Something.
There's
a bunch here to choose from. So
for the barren wasteland, a cool dry place.
Oh, that is good. A cool dry. Yes. See Mac? You have to wallow in the gutter a little more.
You're right. I wasn't sinking low enough.
Animals United. Come on.
Or just menopause in an hour. I mean, there's got to be.
All right. I should think a cool dry place wins it for me. Conquest? That's not bad. All right. Moving on to our ambush topics. Random topics thrown at each other for fun and amusement. I'll go first in honor of Michael's big move. Pretty easy. Big moves. That doesn't have to be big. Just moves. Okay. Characters that moved.
How about that big... Oh, what is his name? The big, fat, floaty dude in Dune? Baron Harkonnen or whatever? He was big and fat, and he just floated around the place. That's a big move.
Okay. I see where you're going with this, Alan.
Yes, oh, yeah. I was thinking it's a different direction.
Okay. I'll let that one slide. But I was thinking, you know, maybe that... What was his name? Baron von Karkis?
Hey, Baron Harkonnen.
Yes. Baron Conan. I'm saying maybe move from a suburb to, you know, a penthouse suite or something.
Well, he did start off on Dune, on Arrakis, but then Heath's family moved so that the Atreides could move in and take his place.
Excellent.
So that was all part of his evil plot.
That works. It's a zip code change. So. There you go. Very, very good tandem ambush topic answer.
I'm trying to think. There were several TV series that made location changes.
That's what I was thinking, too. Yeah.
Can I say another one?
Go ahead.
Yeah.
The Jeffersons.
That's right.
That's right.
Of course.
Yeah.
They moved on up.
That's the first bars of the title song they take.
There you go.
Laverne and Shirley, which is being released the fifth season this week, they moved from Milwaukee to California.
I did not. Right.
That was kind of the later years when the show was.
Yeah.
Is that a jumping the shark, desperate for creative upheaval?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But Lenny and Squiggy moved with them, so.
Of course.
They were pretty much the stars of the show by that time.
Yeah, that's just true. Weeds, the Mary Louise Parker show, moved like to Mexico for one season.
I thought it was San Diego. They were on
was
the border.
San Diego? Okay.
I could be wrong. I don't know.
And then they moved to New York just recently.
Yeah, I mean, going way back, I mean, I Love Lucy in the later years, they moved to California, where they had all the, and then they introduced celebrity cameos every week.
Oh, so.
They moved to Connecticut, too, the country. Remember? They got the farmhouse.
Yeah.
I didn't realize they were that globetrotting.
They were, baby.
Okay. Well, those are all way better answers than mine. That's really dumb. Like, I just started with, hey, Michael, move. That's what we'll do. And I just try to fit something to that. So, and because Eric's not here, I'm going to throw this right in his face and talk about He-Man.
Topic.
Specifically, Masters of the Universe, the live-action He-Man film, which we all crave on Blu-ray. And even more specific, this is really a stupid answer, but there's a character in Masters of the Universe called Detective Lubick. Does this ring a bell to anybody? No, he was played by James Tolkien. Not and he was that. He was actually the principal from Back to the Future. You know.
Oh yes.
Yeah. So that Paul guy. So, but he played a detective in Masters of the Universe, and he eventually, you know, he's kind of antagonist, but he eventually comes around to help He-Man and Courtney Cox fight Skeletor. I know I'm sounding like I'm making this up, but it's real.
This is when He-Man comes to Earth, correct?
That's right. He-Man comes to Earth. Skeletor chases him. They've got this special key that you can jump through dimensions with. Skeletor's trying to take over Grayskull, get all the powers of the universe, boom, boom, boom. They all get transported to Castle Grayskull with Lubick, and he helps defeat Skeletor's forces. And at the end, Lubick decides to stay in Eternia. So he moves from whatever city he was in. Then they made this big thing, like he's standing in this kind of, he's like, he looks like Julius Caesar. He's like standing in this robe, and he's got like this slave girl feeding him grapes and stuff.
Oh my goodness.
And he's talking about, why would I want to go back? There's smog, I got beautiful women here. And so there you go.
You know what the real truth is? He probably met Bo. And just
said, "Here you go. I feel for you, man. I'm going to stick around here." So, Detective Lubick, moving to Eternia, which would be a great sitcom spinoff, wouldn't it?
Yeah, where was that spinoff? This is
right. Lubick in Eternia. Lubick in the house. Yeah. And whenever I mention Masters of the Universe, I always have to mention one of my favorite parts, which is the pig boy. We haven't told the pig boy story.
What?
Right, Mac? listening to the audio commentary for the DVD, I learned from the director that Mattel does the He-Man toys. They put out a contest for if a kid won this contest, he would actually have a walk-on role in the He-Man movie. Well, this kid shows up. They have nothing to do with it. They don't know where to put him. So they put him in this weird pig costume, and they have him hand Skeletor's staff to him as he walks past him during one scene. And it's just weird. It's this very weird scene that's just plugged in there. Skeletor's walking. This little weird pig... Pig boy gives him a staff and moves on. That's the pig boy story. That's like probably the greatest thing I've ever heard on a commentary
track. Damn.
So there you go. So
pig boy never got his own action figure?
I don't think so. I don't know if that was part
of it. They recycled an Ugnaught from Empire.
I mean, it sucks that the poor kid like couldn't. I mean, he had to wear a pig's mask for crying out loud. Yeah. No, I mean, he couldn't even show his friends. Like, hey, swear that was me, boys. Trust me. Yeah. All right. So hopefully you guys have brought better stuff than that. So, Mac, how about you? What do you got?
All right. Strange and Unusual Plant Life.
A Little Shop of Horrors. You have Audrey, too.
Of course. It's a classic.
Yes. Okay, I was thinking about this. I read the book. I never saw the movie. But it's The Ruins.
Oh, yeah.
Scott whatever, right? He did A Simple Plan. It was one of those books I just picked up. And read it and had no idea what I was in for. And it's pretty much killer vines.
Yeah.
I mean, and if the guy wasn't such a good writer, I mean, I would have stopped to think, this is incredibly stupid.
Well, see the movie.
Oh, maybe. I mean, I don't know if, the, I mean, I, yeah, I'd have to see what the movie did because this was, like, it's one of those things and you visually think, ooh, scary and cool. But when you think about it, it's like, you know, these vines are like setting traps for humans. And it's like, what? I don't know. Must have missed the central nervous system in a plant during my...
Oh, that, among many science. Other things that they can do.
That's right.
How about in the Stephen King short... What was the short movies where... Oh, shoot.
Creep Show,
where he's... it's actually Stephen King, and he starts growing the plants all over his body. So it turns into a giant plant.
Was that the original, or was that Creepshow 2?
That's the first one.
That's the first one.
Yeah, that's the first one.
That's pretty messed up scene in that.
Yeah, those Creepshow movies do have, like, you know, they had sporadically upsetting scenes thrown in. Like, Creepshow 2, I never liked the blob in the lake creep me out, but that's neither here nor there, so.
back to me.
Back to you, Mac, yeah.
The ultimate has to be the talking trees from The Wizard of Oz.
Ah, yeah.
That right there is, you know, if you want nightmare fuel, there you go. I mean, how many little kids over the decades have just been freaked the hell out by those creepy talking trees?
Yeah, throwing apples at Dorothy. That's
exactly. They got those bad attitudes and those creepy mouths that flap open and then throwing the apples and, it's just monstrous.
You sound like you've been traumatized by it, man.
I have. I'm still haven't gotten over First time I saw those trees when I was a kid.
All right. I'm going to give Michael a little bit more time. I'm not sure if he's got something cooking yet, but we'll go Alice.
Okay. I just saw the remake of Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, which, by the way, is a fabulous movie.
It is.
And, yeah, and I didn't realize that the girl who plays Lisbeth is from the United States. I thought she was Swedish or European. Mm-hmm. So my topic is the worst accents by an actor in a movie.
Ooh, good. Boy, that's a great one, and that's very rich as well.
Let's see, Martin Short in the Father of the Bride movies.
That's rough.
Yeah, yeah.
Some ambiguous country that does not exist.
I know.
I think that's a Meepo's accent.
Thank you, Belky.
Meepo's is a fictional land. We have nailed that down, right?
Yes.
I think that's where Lubick is from originally. let's see. Boy, I'm trying to steer away from some of the low-hanging fruit, like your Kevin Costners of the world.
Right. hey, his American accent in Robin Hood was flawless.
It was a flawless American accent. let me think. Okay, well, this is really stretching it. But I think, what goes around comes around, Alice, right? You took my moving one, and if you stretch it, I'll stretch yours a little bit. It's not an accent. I don't know if it's an accent, really, but Batman's gravelly voice in The Dark Knight. So I guess it's a superhero accent, but, as much as I love that movie with every fiber of my being, I just do not see that. I did not see that choice. I don't know why they made it so lozenge-y.
Christian Bale's a genius, right? Nobody wants to question
it. No one needs to get up in that.
Isn't the idea that that's how other people see Batman? That's his voice as interpreted by others because he's so dark and scary?
Yeah, I don't know.
He just had a sore throat through the whole movie.
I don't know. I'll give it as much latitude as needed, Mac. I'm on record for...
Yeah, maybe Alice is right, maybe because it's easy to catch cold when you spend all your time, lurking on rooftops.
That's true. See, that's need some airborne.
Is it my turn, or did everybody go?
No, let's see. For me, I guess Julia Roberts and Mary Riley. Just for that one line when she says, "There was blood on the door."
That was on my list. Yeah, that's pretty bad. Nice. Well, I'm going to go with Dick Van Dyke and Mary Poppins. He was pretty awful in that. It was one minute he sounded like Dick Van Dyke from the Dick Van Dyke Show, and the next minute a really awful Cockney accent. So that ruined the movie for me. I still don't like to watch
really?
The movie. Yeah, it's like a fingernails on a chalkboard. It's like, here he goes. He's going to talk.
Wow, that is...
I know.
That did a lot of damage, huh?
It did.
The penguin dance didn't make up for it?
No.
I'll throw in a bonus here, because mine was kind of sucky. I just remembered a movie I reviewed a while ago that had some pretty bad accents. See, the movie was Pirates of Ghost Island. That's not that. Okay, no. It scored a solid 35 for me, so. but the pirates in there had some of the all-time great, terrible accents. And I just can't even possibly even begin to tell you how terrible it was. And in fact, it was so bad, I'm actually looking at my review now, they said stuff like, "I, me saucy wench." And horrible pirate accents. So, Okay, Mike, what do you got?
Well, in honor of War Horse, because I have never had any love for horse movies, genres that bore you to tears.
Okay. The psychological horror movie bores me to tears. And by that, the movies that fit into that, you can tell automatically because you look at the disc cover and it's like 8 20-something standing in a row staring at you, at the bottom of it. You know what I'm talking about? So it's like generic horror movie title at the top and then like... 6, 7, 8 attractive 20-something standing in a row looking at you. And it's PG-13. And that is your, psychological terror movie. And it's all it is just building up to find out whatever twist there's going to be. You know, mm-hmm.
That's so the I know what you did last summer.
I know what you did last summer. You know, I mean, kicked off by maybe Scream, but Urban Legend. You remember that? And
yep. Yeah.
And then there was just a stretch where
Final Destination.
I mean, there was just a crazy stretch where it was just, you know, nonstop. I mean, Michael, I remember just getting those DVDs pretty regularly.
Yeah.
X amount of years ago, whatever that was. But yeah, it was just like, and not even like those movies are at least R-rated kind of horror movies, you know.
I mean, these just got
yeah, they're PG-13, so you have like goofy gore to look at.
Right.
It's just it was like psychological suspense. So brutal. Yeah.
I guess being a guy, I don't watch a whole lot of romantic comedies.
Mm-hmm. And the ones that you have bored you?
A lot of them have.
Yeah.
I'll admit there's some that I've enjoyed, but yeah, for the most part, it's and you know they get criticized a lot for the being formulaic. They have the so-called meet cute at the beginning and then the ups and downs of the relationship. And then just when it seems like they've fallen in love, there's a last-minute complication that takes us into the third act. And, so I guess it's a difficult genre to pull me in. It's difficult for me to get pulled into that genre.
Yeah, I'm with you, and I'm a chick, and those things bug me too. Okay, you may not invite me back on here again, Dave, after I tell you this, but I have the things that bore me are sort of sci-fi movies, and in particular, the whole Star Wars series.
Ooh.
I know. See, please forgive me. Please forgive me.
Yeah,
but
please direct apologies to Mac McIntyre.
I apologize to you, Mac, too. But they're like science fiction soap operas. You know, Luke's father is Darth Vader, and it's like Susan Lucci on All My Children.
Wow. Wow.
I just kind of get all that stuff a little bit boring.
It was this moment where Alice Nelson compared one of the all-time greatest moments in film. Possibly number one of all time, to Susan Lucci.
All of a sudden, my crown goes right.
That is legendary. No. That is contrarian a Holy at its best.
I know. That's me, though. Sorry.
Fantastic.
No, you know what? I would totally see a Star Wars movie with Susan Lucci as a Sith Lord. I think that's beyond something that
Darth Lucius. All right. Wow.
Help Michael, me back.
Can you pull us from the brink, Mike?
Well, I mean, again, it was War Horse was one of the things, but it's those animal movies, whether they're talking animals or just, kind of the animal takes a journey that,
that's true.
Homeward Bound or yes, something like that. And like, oh my God, please don't make me sit through another one of these things.
Right, again, luckily Eric's not here to regale you with his Air Bud stories.
Oh, yeah.
So I got to get to the bottom of this horse movies not being up your alley. So give me some other examples of horse movies that you haven't liked.
Well, like
Secretariat, Black maybe?
National Velvet and Seabiscuit. I mean, just like, oh, please, it's just endless number of, it's not like these animals are acting, okay? It's,
right.
They have trainers who make them, you stand here, you do this, and everyone kind of buys into the fact that like, oh, it's so touching and it makes me cry. I'm like, oh, please just stop it already.
Nice. That is the cynicism that we've been missing from this show. You ever see The Black Stallion?
No, I refuse to see those kind of things.
This is
well, which one? It's been remade like 20 times.
Oh, yeah, right. I don't know. Probably the older one. I don't know. Yeah. I just remember watching it as a kid and think it was pretty awesome. I probably would hate myself. And
at least Old Yeller was interesting because Disney had the balls to shoot the dog at the end.
Yeah, they don't make those movies anymore, right?
No, they don't.
That made it for you, Michael, that the dog got killed at the end. Yay!
The alternate endings for Black Beauty gets turned into that pink slime you see on Facebook. I had a thought, too, about all this animal talking, but I will say.
The animal movie that kills me was the 90s remake of Lassie, where Lassie is a stray that the family finds on the side of the road. Not a hair out of place on that dog.
Nice. Absolutely. Yeah, you don't see many of those movies where the animal gets it, you know? You don't see many Artax drowning slowly in a swamp of sadness anymore, do you? slow animal death.
With like 7 or 8 different Benji movies and Boomers, and it's like, you know, I love dogs, and my dog just recently passed away, and I had a hard time with it, but it's just like, some of those dogs have got to go. Got to draw the line somewhere.
Benji 4, best heartworm. Oh, man. Well, that's good. Glad we ended on such a positive, upbeat note.
Dead animals.
So with that, I guess, thank you, Mac, Alice, and Michael for hopping on board and putting together just a sterling episode of the Friday Filibuster. Friday Filibuster at DVDverdict.com is our email. And Mac, I guess I yield the balance of my time to you.
Winter is coming.